yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. But this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to the show. I'm Dan Dunn. What we're drinking today, lots of stuff from our friends at Barrel Craft Spirits. We're going to be drinking some whiskey. In just a little bit, I'm going to be talking to the founder of Barrel Craft Spirits, which is one of my favorite companies in the industry. Joe Beatrice is the man who started that company about 7 years ago in Louisville, Kentucky. And they do something quite unusual in the spirits business, at least as far as the American spirits business goes. So I'm excited to talk to Joe about what Barrel Craft Spirits does that makes them so unique. Also on the show, one of the stars of the hit Netflix series, Never Have I Ever, Ben Norris, is going to be joining us later on in the show, and he and I are going to be drinking some barrel whiskey together. Getting crazy. Some things to talk about. I was supposed to be on the Adam Carolla show this week, the 17th. I was supposed to be on August 17th. That got bumped back a week. So I will be on, if everything goes as planned now, on August 24th. I'll be on the Adam Carolla show doing a martini segment with Adam, Brian, and Gina. We'll be trying to discover the perfect martini. We're going to do a gin martini. We're going to do a vodka martini. We're going to do dirty. We're going to do a Vesper. We're going to mix and match olives versus twist, everything. It's going to be a lot of fun. This Thursday, August 20th, I'll be on at Flaviar's YouTube channel, Nightcap Live, 8 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be doing that, 5 Pacific, Flaviar, every week, every Thursday I'm there. I emcee that. I'm also going to be on JCB Live, Jean-Charles Boisset, winemaker. He makes wine with John Legend. I'm doing an Instagram Live with him on August 19th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time on Jean-Charles Boisset's Instagram. Thanks. Many thanks to everybody who wrote in. Everybody really liked the last episode we did about The Onion. Very funny. I want to thank The Onion for giving me so much material to work with on that. So before we get to our guests, I want to get into a little bit of news. There's all kinds of things going on. I mean, most of the news is bad, but there's news in the spirits industry as well, and some of it's bad and some of it's good. We'll start with bad. My home state, Pennsylvania, I'm actually from Philadelphia. The governor there in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf, has, like in many states, mandates about what you can and can't do in bars. So according to a news report from WPXI TV back there, it says a group of Pennsylvania bar and restaurant owners may defy Governor Tom Wolf's mandates, possibly opening and increasing capacity inside their establishments. Okay, people are getting antsy, frustrated, fed up. Quote, "It's not an ultimatum to anybody. All I'm trying to do is prove a point," said Rod Ambrosi, owner of Al's Cafe and president of the Southwestern Pennsylvania Restaurant and Tavern Association. He says he's fighting for his family business that's been around for decades. So they sent a letter to the governor, and they gave the governor an ultimatum to get back with what they believe are reasonable measures. They can serve alcohol without meals, they can allow direct bar service, and increase their capacity past 25%. And when the reporter asked him, what do you mean, 50, 75, 100, he said, it's not 100%, it can't be 100%. If we do the distancing, we're still cutting down our capacity. So it sounds like this guy wants to have a lot of people in his bar, and I understand it. I really do. This has got to be the most traumatic thing to any small business, any restaurant owner, any bar owner. I cannot imagine what they're going through. But I also understand that the virus doesn't care. Virus isn't going to go, well, you know, he does need to keep his business going, so let's jam some more people in there and I'll just lay off of those people. That's not going to happen. I don't know what the answer is here, but what these bar owners are threatening in Pennsylvania is to break the rules. And I pretty sure that's not going to be the answer. In fact, the state has come down pretty hard and said if these bars decide to break the rules, they're going to lose their liquor licenses. It's a mess. The whole damn thing is a mess, and I don't even know what the solution is, but I don't think the solution is cramming as many people into your bar as possible. We all know what's going to happen. I see it here in Venice, where I live out in California. It's give them an inch, they'll take a yard. I mean, I've gone past bars that are supposed to be doing masks and social distancing, and there are just people crammed in there. And folks, we're not going to get through this if we don't do what we got to do. We got to social distance. We got to wear the mask. We got to squash this virus. As I said before, it doesn't care. Doesn't care how your business is doing. Doesn't care how long you've had your family business. All it cares about is there's bodies, hosts that it can get into. And as long as we keep providing the virus plenty of opportunities to get into more and more people, we're never getting the fuck out of this mess. Okay? Moving on. Florida news, and it's not Florida Man. It should start that way, but it says South Florida craft distilleries are sitting on hundreds of gallons of unsold hand sanitizer, according to the Orlando Sun Sentinel. You'll remember early on in this pandemic, a lot of distilleries pivoted to making hand sanitizer. Everybody thought hand sanitizer was the key out of this thing, and people are still using it, but certainly not at the level. It's the same thing with toilet paper. People went ape shit, pardon the pun, and had to get all the toilet paper. They also needed all the hand sanitizer. Well, that the demand for that's gone down, and now you've got a lot of these distilleries. One of the ones they're talking about here is Chain Bridge Distillery in Oakland Park. They've got about a 500-gallon stockpile of hand sanitizer just taking up space at their distillery. It was needed during that first wave, and they were donating it to frontline workers, emergency responders, and they were selling tiny bottles to the public. But by June, there was not a lot of demand for hand sanitizer, and especially because big brands like Purell started to return to the stores and whatnot. So now you've got these distilleries storing a bunch of hand sanitizer. They're probably going to be stuck with that forever. They're going to end up dumping it. Oh, just more happy news. More and more happy. All right. Okay, fine. I do have some happy news. I swear to you, this is good news here. This is a report from Wine Enthusiasts. It says distillery tasting rooms are reopening, but with some serious changes. My friend Karen Newman wrote this piece roughly 5 months after distilleries closed their doors to the public to halt the spread of the novel coronavirus pandemic. Many started to reopen for tours and tastings. Of course, it's not quite business as usual. Distilleries have made substantial changes with social distancing and safety guidelines in mind. So, as we all know the drill here, you know, it's going to be masks, it's going to be social distancing, you got to be 6 feet apart, you can only have two people in there at a time. You know, typically, a lot of these distillery bars have these, you know, high-end cocktails and all, they're getting rid of all of that, trying to get rid of lines, trying to move people through quickly. Some distilleries have gotten creative to make outdoor drinks enticing. North Charleston's Firefly Distillery, which had opened a new space in February, only have a close in March, now serves cocktails from an Airstream trailer for guests to enjoy at picnic tables outdoors. It's fascinating to watch human beings, how they adapt to situations. And I know I was saying earlier that the thing that we need to do most, we're not doing on the scale we need to, which is to just shut it down. But that said, I am really impressed watching what some of these bars and restaurants are doing, the lengths they're going to. I see here in California, any bar restaurant that has a parking lot is fencing it in and putting in tables and making an outdoor space. And they're not making as much money as they did before, but it's keeping them in business. So distilleries are opening. I don't know how I feel about it. I can't wait to drink some whiskey. I really can't. I'm going to be doing that shortly with Ben Norris. I'm hoping that in the future weeks and months, I'm going to be able to bring you more and more good news about things that are going on. Oh, I did see today that Ryan Reynolds sold Aviation Gin for like $600 million to Diageo. So that's good news if you're Ryan Reynolds. switch gears, get the news off the fact that you got married in a plantation. That was the big news last week. They apologized to Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively for getting married 7 years ago on a plantation property, which I thought was kind of silly that they would have to apologize for that. But I mean, really, if you look at it, all the ground in the United States is unsacred ground now. You know, we defiled this place when we got here. So if you're going to use those standards, then nobody will be able to do anything anywhere in the United States. But that said, the news has now shifted away from Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively's wedding faux pas to the fact that Ryan Reynolds just got even richer than he already is by selling Aviation Gin to Diageo. Didn't get Clooney money, didn't get the billion, didn't get Patron money. I think they got $3 billion from Bacardi, but $650 million, something in that. That's nothing to sneeze at. So congratulations, Ryan Reynolds. You deserve it. And now, why don't we get to our first interview of the day, huh? But joining me now, the founder of one of my favorite companies in the adult beverage industry, Barrel Craft Spirits, was founded in 2013 in Louisville, Kentucky. And they have an interesting business model, a little bit different than what you normally see in the spirits industry in the United States. And to talk about that and what they're doing there is the proprietor, Barrel Craft Spirits, Joe Beatrice. Joe, how are you, man?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being here. You know, I've been a fan of what you're doing for a while. I've hosted events up in Pebble Beach, and we've had Barrel take part of that and a couple of years ago, and everybody loved it. So talk about what you do. What makes your company different than a lot of the whiskey producers in America?
Well, at the heart of what we do is that we're blenders. We spend the majority of our time, when we're not dealing with government regulations and things, with the product and creating different blends of the bourbons, the ryes, the whiskeys, and then innovating some really interesting new finished whiskeys. So, and we try to bring the most interesting, different, innovative products that we all love here.
So just so people understand though, Joe, I just want to make, so you're sourcing, you're curating whiskeys in a way, like you're going out, you're finding it, you're picking from here and here and here, which is something you see happen more often in places like Scotland, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. But at the time you started doing it, it wasn't happening a lot here in the United States, right?
That is correct. We are among the first to do that. And over the last 6-7 years, we've been acquiring barrels from, we're up to 65 or 66 different suppliers from different places, different distilleries in the United States, different countries. And we then we acquire them, we further mature them. And then we from those barrels, we select to make our products. And that is really the difference. It is similar to the way some of the merchant bottlers were constructed in Scotland. That is correct.
And it's obviously it's worked for you. This year alone has been a huge year for Barrel Craft Spirits. You guys just won the Chairman's Trophy, right, at the Ultimate Spirits Challenge, the Dovetail American Whiskey. That was the top scoring product in the whole category, right? 97 out of 100 points. You also got best bourbon, batch 21, got best bourbon at San Francisco World Spirits Competition. Yours truly is a judge up there. So this has been a fantastic year for you so far. And I say that fully acknowledging that it's been a shitty year in a lot of ways, but but certainly not in terms of how people are receiving your whiskey.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a very, we're having a good year. Our products are doing extremely well. We've won a lot of awards, as you mentioned. And, you know, with everything else going on in the world, we're incredibly lucky and fortunate and grateful that we're doing so well. And, you know, we have a very large population of loyal customers. And we're, you know, we're primarily sold off-premise, liquor stores rather than bars and restaurants. We do have a presence in bars and restaurants, but But the fact that we are available online and also through off-premise locations has really been fortunate for us. But we're grateful to everybody who keeps enjoying our products.
You're absolutely right that you have a rabid fan base. This is what's fascinating to me, Joe, is how does that happen? Because you haven't been around that long and you're in Louisville and you're in the midst of all the, you know, these legendary brands with so much history and legacy of, you know, whether it's Beam or Wild Turkey or Old Forester and all these, and you have in a very short period of time managed to position yourself right alongside all of these iconic brands. How does that happen?
Well, I go back to, there's a couple of things. I go back to the product. Nothing gets in the bottle that we don't think is perfect. So we spend, it's all about the care and curation and blending of the products that we make. So we start from creating the best possible product that we can, but that alone isn't enough. I mean, there's a lot of great ideas, a lot of great products that are unsuccessful. We're successful because we also let other people speak for ourselves. We don't make any crazy claims. We never use any borrowed interest to identify and sell the brand. It's always been about what the product is about, and we let other people comment and appreciate it in the way they want. So we've always entered in the only competitions we enter in are blind judging competitions. So the bias is removed. In San Francisco and Ultimate are two of the top, as far as I'm concerned.
And so everybody out there understands what Joe's talking about. So I'll give you, I for San Francisco, for instance, the judges are made up of a lot of distinguished people, some bartenders, brand owners that, you know, and me. So, you know, we go around, they bring it out and we know the category. We don't know much else. Right. And it's all blind. And that's the most objective way of measuring the quality of the spirit.
Yeah, plus the other thing I like about what they do is they do multiple rounds, and so with different judges. So to get into the finals in that competition, you've got a lot of people who have approved and like your product. So
absolutely,
and that's the underpinnings of the way we really built the brand. We have let the bloggers and Instagram folks and everybody speak about our product, and so it's all about. You know, the term influencer is so overused, but in the day when it was different, an influencer was somebody that influenced and influenced a relatively small group of people. And so we early on connected with a lot of those influencers and continue to grow our base of influencers. And people look to those people for guidance on products, whatever it may be. And in the whiskey category, there just happens to be a lot of people who really know what they're doing. And they, by and large, like our product. And so we have a great relationship with them. It's really been how we built the brand.
You alluded to it earlier. Ultimately, it's what's in the bottle that matters. The juice has got to be good. And I can tell you, a couple of years ago, we had Will Schragis, who works for you. Will came out to Pebble Beach Food and Wine, and I did a thing up there called the Whiskey River. And that was, we had a tasting room on the opening night of Pebble Beach, and then we did a seminar. But I can tell you from that tasting room, because I was working that room, and we had about, there were eight brands in total in there. And every time I looked over, Will had a huge crowd of people surrounding his table. And that's the obvious way to gauge, like, you know, because you look around and then you go, all right, maybe this brand over here is not getting as much love and I feel bad. But people loved Barrel. Then we did the seminar the next day, and that was sold out. It was a big seminar. And then what happens is you start seeing people come up to me and they say, oh, I love this. And I've tried that barrel bourbon batch this. And that's really how it happens. I think on a grassroots level is if you're really doing great juice, you're really making a great product. People talk about it. They want to go on social media and talk about it. People are always hitting me up and asking me. And yours is, you know, I got a handful of whiskeys in America that are always kind of my go-tos when people say, really, and I'm not just blowing sunshine up your ass here. Like people say, what do you like? And I'll say you, I'll say Michter's, I'll say that I got a handful of brands that I personally go to that I want. If I'm sitting at home, that's what I drink. And I tell people that. So I've really seen that happen with you guys. Like there's been the word of mouth campaign about Barrel, I think, has been tremendous.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, Will is still exhausted from that event.
That took a lot. And there was a golf tournament. There was all kinds of stuff going on there, man. No Pebble Beach this year, unfortunately. A lot of things. I mean, look, so that brings us to that next thing is how are you and the brand weathering what's going on now? And what's the strategy moving forward? Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty. Nobody knows what's going to happen when, but what's your plan to keep the brand going?
Well, our trajectory this year and assuming that we don't have zombies or UFO invasion next year, we're continued to have this experience really nice growth. We're doing a lot of virtual tastings. We've been doing weekly open houses where people can come in and meet us and we taste a couple products. And so we're doing a lot of those that are open to the general public. We also all of our brand development people are doing lots of tastings out in conjunction with where we can, because it's state by state retailers or just groups. We do a lot with different groups. And you know, it's really just trying to get the product into people's hands. And we're lucky, we're fortunate because we have built a reputation so that when we're doing batch 1, 2, and 3, people absolutely had to taste it before they would, you know, commit to it. And now we're at a different place, which is there's enough trust out there that people will roll the dice and buy the next batch because they know it's going to be, there's something in store for them that will be good. And so that's really working for us. As things slowly open up, there are some events that are beginning to happen, and that will be great when those come back to life. And we'll continue to participate in those. It's hard to know what level of in-store sampling is going to ever come back.
It's crazy.
You know, from where we're sitting, who knows? But we're continuing to do whatever we can to connect with people in any way we can. We're also making a lot of our products available online.
You talk about the new batch. You got a new batch out, right? 25.
Yeah.
I have it here. I'm going to crack it. I'm cracking it shortly with Ben Norris. Ben and I are going to, we're going to get into this. You know, I would drink with you, but it's cheating. You know, there's nothing I'm going to be able to tell you about this. When I talk to Ben, I'm the expert. He doesn't know anything, you know, so he's very excited. Joe was kind enough to send. So this is the way we do business now. You know, it's like I'm in one location and the guest is in another location and we're all doing it over Zoom. And so there's a lot of logistics that go into that. We do these sorts of things. Like you got to get a bottle here. You got to get a bottle here. We're all trying to coordinate it. How are we going to drink? Are we making a cocktail? So, I'm excited to be, and I know that Ben is very excited. You guys sent him a nice package of whiskey, and it's funny. This kid, you know, he's like 27 years old, but he's on a hit show. But I'll tell you what, he was super excited about this. He emailed
me.
He said, "Man, I can't believe it. They sent me like 3 bottles. This is going to be amazing." And I said, "Yeah." So I scheduled we're going to do that recording with him a little bit later in the day. It's a little early for me out here in California, be sampling your wares, but I don't really need to, Joe, because the consistency is always there. You're always hitting it out. And, you know, how I found out about Barrel Bourbon was my good friend, our mutual friend, Fred Minnick. You know, years ago, Fred's a big whiskey expert. He has a Bourbon Plus magazine. I write a column for them. But years ago, when I was writing a piece for the Rob Report about maybe smaller, like lesser known whiskeys. And the first one he said, "This is the one you got to do." I don't know if you remember, I wrote that piece years ago.
Remember.
And he was absolutely right. I do see brands come along that it doesn't hit, you know, it doesn't work. But then there's a handful of newbies, if you want to say, that have just, and I think it must be a combination of like who you brought on. And Tripp, right, is your master distiller?
Yep.
And then
Tripp and I have been blending since batch 2.
But that's really, I think people need to understand is it's not like there's a a formula, a matrix that just goes here, push these buttons and these proportions, and it'll be perfect. A lot of it just has to do with you and your ability to taste something and go, you know, and that's an art. That's the thing that people don't, it's not pure, you know, this amount, 72% of this and 4% of this, and it's going to be the best bourbon you ever. It has to be, somebody's got to taste it. Somebody's got to have the palate to understand what works, and you do. And how did that, this was not your original calling, right? You were in marketing and you were a tech, right?
Yep. I was in the internet early. Created a company that did web application development, online advertising, then deeper technology integration as it grew, building lots of social media platforms. So yes, that was my background. But you know, it's funny. I get asked this question periodically. I've made beer most of my adult life,
personally, not commercially.
For myself. And you know, I met Jim Cooker. Early, like many years ago.
Sam Adams.
And I remember him saying to me, this is how we make it. Here's the recipe, basically. And he goes, you'll never be able to make it. You'll never be able to replicate it. And I'm like, let me try that. And he was right. I was crazy meticulous about making beer. And it's really hard to make the same thing over and over again. It's really difficult, which is part of what informed what we do. But along the way also, I didn't realize until a couple of years before I started doing this that I did have a palate that could differentiate. And I go back to this story where I was in a restaurant having dinner with a friend. I made a bottle of wine, and then we ordered a second bottle of wine, the same wine. And they opened it up and it poured in the glass, and I was just like, it was corked. And I'm looking at him and he's drinking it, and I'm like, does that taste different to you? And he said, no, what's the difference? And in that moment, I realized, well, maybe I can taste some things that other people can't taste. That was a pretty gross, you know, example of it. But so it just one thing led to the other. And I realized that I had this ability. And so I met Trip early on. We started blending with Batch 2. Recently, we hired Nick Christensen from Butchertown Grocery. She was a beverage director there, and she's been incredible addition to the team, and she's working alongside of us blending, and Will also participates in the blending. So it's collaborative, but I get to have the final say. And
there's a word we get, craft distilling, craft spirits, craft. It is a craft. There's a reason why. I can tell you this: when brands get master distillers, blenders, they tend to stick around. Okay. So when you have somebody that works, you know, you look at Wild Turkey and Jimmy Russell and Eddie Russell and all these guys, because they recognize that there aren't that many people that have that palate that are able to identify flavors and be able to put them all together and make them work in a way that the general public also responds to. And you're one of those people. So that's,
thank you.
And I'm lucky. I'm lucky. I know you. I'm on the mailing list. I'm glad to be on the mailing list of Barrel Burn.
You know, it's funny. It's funny because we all have different things that we like and don't like, and there are different things that we have a lower tolerance of. And one of the things that's really worked between Tripp and me is that there are a couple of faults that are so irritating to him, and a couple of different faults that are equally irritating to me, that it's very easy to rule out stuff that we don't want to do. So you know, figuring out how to say no is really important. And for us, it's we love doing it. And everything is, it's a yes or no almost immediately. There's not a whole lot of gray area in what we do. We like it, we don't like it, move on. And we could do 100 different variations of a blend at some point for anything.
When do you know, Joe? And I guess it would be the same thing as somebody composing a song or a painting or writing it. When do you know it's never done? I would say most artists would say this, it's never done. You just stop, right? Yeah. This is the, okay. But for you, when's that moment when you say, okay, we got it?
It's such a great question, because it's so important to know when you stop. And so that's just, let me a quick digression. The way our process works is we'll do these blends in the lab. So we do a theoretical. So we have, you know, we play around with this whiskey, this particular bourbon, this age, this mash bill. And we play around with it, and we might do hundreds of different combinations. We try to group it down to what we call 5 points, where we have 5 different primary components, which are made up of different barrels we got to. And then once we get to a blend that we like, and that is a combination of elimination, and then we get to the point where this has all the things we want, we stop blending. So then we have to take it out into our big tanks. We have some very large blending tanks, and we step up to it. We dump a third of the barrels that we want, half of the barrels we want, until we get to the point where we inch our way up to it. In fact, and here's where I'm going with this. When you're going to taste tonight, batch 25, that is the first bourbon that we blended with any wheated bourbon in it at all. So one of the components is a wheated bourbon. It's the first time we use any. And it's a relatively small percentage of it.
Just so everybody knows when you're listening out there, sorry, Joe, I don't mean to cut you up, but when he says a wheated bourbon, obviously any bourbon, the mash bill's got to be at least 51% corn, okay, to be bourbon. So what Joe's saying is that other portion of the mash bill can often be made up of all different kinds of starches. And in this case, if wheat is a component in there, they call that a wheated bourbon. And Joe, say what a wheated bourbon means flavor profile wise.
It's generally softer, where rye is almost always in 95% of the bourbons, the second grain. Rye is that in your face,
spicy.
It's, you know, drink any MGP 95% rye and you will know what rye tastes like. That's what it tastes like. And so having the wheat softens it up a lot and it introduces different, really different notes. And when you start combining with other mash bills, we've teased out some very fruity components, which Tripp and I both have sweet tooths, although we don't eat a lot of sweet things. We like that kind of tropical notes and fruit flavors. You know, it's if I could put an umbrella on it and have a tiki drink, it'd be perfect. And so we really blended this thing to just the right point. And when we were blending this, and this was round numbers, 3,000 gallons total in this batch. So it's it's a mid-sized one. The variance, we were playing in that 3,000 gallons with less than 5 gallons differential of one of the components to get it just right. And we have these big tanks that are these proprietary construction and we have these gigantic propellers inside there that are agitators that move really slowly and they're engineered to turn over the entire contents in 18 minutes. So it's like, if you look inside, it's like a James Bond villain killing machine. It's okay. Really scary looking in there. And so so we're able to like ongoing test it and we were inching our way up to it. And when we got there in one moment, we just stopped. It was like, no more. That's it. That's the
secret. Nailed it.
That's the secret.
This one, the batch 25, which I'm going to be drinking with Ben in a little bit, you're saying this is the first one where a wheated bourbon has been a component of it.
Yes.
So are you saying that this, for fans of barrel bourbon, is this going to be one that's unlike any they've had before?
It is different, but it isn't a wheated bourbon and it's on its own. So if you were to take any of our products and then have a wheated bourbon next to it, you would be able to distinguish it. If you drink, you know, if you tried that, you would see the difference. This is using the wheat as a component in a way that differentiates it slightly from our other batches, but you'll recognize some of the characteristics that we like. And and if I didn't tell you that it was wheated, it would be really hard for a lot of people to pull that. You would probably get it, but it's hard for a lot of people to be able to like pull that out because it is very subtle. So it is different, but it's not a radical departure, but you know, it is different.
And it's available now. The batch 25 is available now.
Yes.
So where do people go if they want to get it?
It is, if it isn't available now, it will be in the next couple of weeks. Well, we have a locator on our website, barrelbourbon.com or barrelcraftspirits.com. There's a store locator. And it may not be there it may not show up for a month of where the shipments are because there's a lag time in the data, but it'll be getting there eventually. But it's going to be in all the usual suspects, all the stores that normally carry our products.
You know, retail on that?
Same, $90, $89.99.
Okay, yeah.
MSRP.
And I got to tell you, folks, it's worth it. You know, you hear that and you go, oh, 90 might be a little high. I mean, you got, there are less expensive whiskeys, but in my opinion, $90 for a bottle of barrel bourbon is a steal. I would say that. It's,
well, thank you.
It's one of my favorites. I mean that. I am excited to drink some with Ben Norris. That's coming up. And Joe, someday I am excited to get to Louisville and drink with you, my friend. I'm hoping that's going to be sooner rather than later.
I hope so. You're welcome anytime. I hope so.
But it was great having you on. Appreciate all the insight into what you do, how you do it. And later on, we're going to hear how we react to what you do, because Ben and I are going to taste through all this stuff, man. And I'm going to pull out some of the older bottles of barrel that I have to drink as well. So it should be fun. Looking forward to that. But Joe Beatrice, thank you for joining us on this episode. And we hope to have you back soon, man.
Thank you. Anytime.
Folks, I've never admitted this on the show before, but I'm a guy. Yeah, it's true. And as a guy, I'm here to tell you that so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair. That's why when we get into our 20s and 30s and start noticing the first signs of hair loss, it definitely feels like panic time. Because let's face it, no guy is ever ready to go bald. Thankfully, now there's Keeps, the simple and easy way to keep your hair. You used to have to go to the doctor's office for your hair loss prescription. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. Keeps treatments typically take between 4 to 6 months to see results, so it's important to act fast. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Treatments start at just $10 per month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get your first month free. That's right, free. How? Go to keeps.com/drinking. That's KEEPS.com/drinking to receive your first month of treatment for free. Take care of your hair, and your hair will take care of you. Joining me now on the show, I'm very excited about this. It's not often, and we get actors on here. We get musicians, we get actors, we get people across the pop cultural spectrum. But it's rare that I get an actor on the show that not only is on a hit show, but also went to the same college I went to, Temple University in Philadelphia, where all the greats come from. Let's see, there's Bob Saget, there's me, Hall & Oates went there, some other guy, used to be America's Dad, his name won't be spoken, he went to Temple as well, and the gentleman joining me right now, who is one of the stars of the hit Netflix series, Never Have I Ever. I got to meet him or Zoom meet him a few weeks back. We did a thing on live stream, and it was a lot of fun. So I'm really glad that he's agreed to come on this show. Ben Norris, how are you, man?
I'm really good. How you doing, Dan?
It's good to see you, brother. I forgot I should have also mentioned in that intro that you are a budding whiskey enthusiast.
That's right. Ever since a few weeks ago when the famous, the great Dan Dunn gave me an incredible tasting of some Japanese whiskeys, and I'm reaching for the stars.
Well, now we're getting into some really cool stuff here, not to poo-poo those Japanese whiskeys, but we're drinking one of the most award-winning whiskeys in America right now, Barrel Bourbon. I had Joe Beatrice, who founded the brand, on the show a little bit earlier. And as he and I talked about, it has been a tremendous year for them. They've won basically every major award we could. And so you and I, Ben, this is special. You and I are going to be drinking the Batch 25. This is their brand new batch. It's not even available to the public yet. Okay. You and I are going to be drinking that. We're going to be checking it out. But first, what's your knowledge experience with bourbon?
I would say it's actually more on the experience and less on the knowledge side of that question. But I never was a huge drinker, and liquor never really sat well with me until I started drinking specifically bourbon, and that would be bullet bourbon. And my brother-in-law is actually who got me into that. And that's kind of when I finally started flourishing when it came to not the knowledge, like I said, but the experience.
It was your aha moment. You went, oh, I like this.
Definitely my aha moment. I wouldn't say I have a sweet tooth when it comes to food, but with drinks, I have a sweet tooth. And I think I really liked whiskey in general because there was a sweetness to it. I hated vodka because to me, it tasted like rubbing alcohol. And I felt like whiskey, specifically bourbon, was the first thing that I enjoyed the flavor of.
You mentioned the sweetness. You know what I think we should do here while we're talking, and I want to get into everything with you. I want to get into the career, and obviously you've had the great fortune of getting on a hit TV show. Yeah. I want to talk about that. But let's, I've got an old fashioned right here. I made myself an old fashioned. Cheers to you. Thanks for joining. What do you got there?
I have this neat batch 25 right now.
Okay, so let me do that. Let me pour myself some of this batch 25. Just so you know out there, it's going to be available, as Joe mentioned earlier on the show. It's $90 a bottle, okay? That's what they charge across the board, barrel, all the time. That's what they charge, $90. And it is, I know that sounds crazy to say that it's a steal at $90, but you know what? It fucking is. So there you go. All right, so now, just so you know, Ben, this batch 25, brand new. This is a blend of whiskeys that they have procured from Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana. It's a selection of barrels of various ages. There's a 5.5-year-old, a 9-year-old, 13-year-old, and a 15-year-old whiskey in the mix here. All were aged in American white oak barrels. So then, you know, that's a rule, right? In order to be called bourbon, it's got to be aged in new American white oak barrels that have been charred. It can't be called bourbon otherwise, okay?
That's
one of the rules.
I did not know that.
This one, again, whiskeys are all over the country, but they bottled this in Kentucky. It's 113.4 proof. So this is cash strength. This is not a whiskey for the faint of heart, okay? So let's do this, Ben. First thing we're going to do is nose this thing, okay? So what you want to do is you want to take that glass, and you don't want to ram your nose into it. You kind of want to swirl it around, agitate it a little bit. And then you're going to breathe it in with your nose and your mouth slightly open. You're going to just go and breathe it in like that. Now, what are you getting on the nose? Just whatever comes to mind.
I think I'm getting some nuts. I think I'm getting a little nutty.
You are getting nutty, man. I can see that already. Slow down. Nutty, slow down over there. You know,
I'll slow down.
You're getting some nuts. Okay, yeah. I'm getting a little pineapple, a little honeydew melon.
Yeah, some melon. First off, love honeydew melon. Big fan of honeydew melon.
A little espresso beans, some maple syrup in there.
Yeah,
that's sweetness.
I would say syrup. I was actually going to say vanilla, but then when you said syrup, I think I connected with that a little better.
Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're going to take a taste. And what I like to do when I taste is to take a little sip to prime my palate, just a tiny bit. Get that in there. Chew it up like that, and then we take a bigger sip, and that's where we're going to really get what's going on here flavor-wise. So right off the bat, I'm getting some fig, some sour orange there. It's very zesty. There's a lot, acidic fruit is coming through right away for me. What are you getting?
It's definitely zesty. I'm getting a lot. I'm getting like tingly. Is that kosher? Is that
absolutely, man? I mean, listen, you know, the alcohol content in this is high. So that is going to hit you. Okay. But what they've done a really great job of here is the alcohol is not overwhelming it. The alcohol flavor is not yet.
Yeah, it's smooth.
It's smooth. You mentioned nuts, like I'm getting a little macadamia nut there there's that macadamia. Sort of leather quality to it.
I could have a candle of this smell. I mean, this is really like a sweet, sweet, pleasant smell.
It is. Yeah. And now it's a robust whiskey. So here's what I'm going to do. So I got my little dropper here, right? So I'm going to put just a few drops of some spring water in there.
Okay.
Okay. And then what that does, doing that, adding that water, is it tends to make things a little bit more focused. The flavors, because it's mitigating the alcohol effect a little bit, and then the other flavors are coming out. So now when I nose it with the water, I'm getting some honey, some clove, some banana in there.
Yeah, it's definitely like a slightly different smell, just a slightly different smell.
And adding the water actually changes the texture on the palate a little bit. The mouthfeel changes a little bit, gets a little bit, thicker.
Yeah.
And then maybe the finish is a little bit more delicate, but this is just a fantastic whiskey. And as Joe talked about earlier on the show, another rule for bourbon, Ben, is that 51% of the mash, which is the starch, they're going to use that to ferment to then distill and make alcohol. 51% of the mash has to be corn to be able to be called bourbon. Generally, the rest of the mash, a lot of times it'll be primarily made up of rye, some barley. This one's got a decent amount of wheat in the remaining part of the mash. So it's called a wheated bourbon. And this is the first one that they've done at barrel, the first kind of wheated bourbon they've done. And it just adds a lightness to it, I think, that's really, really delicious.
Just very drinkable. Not that other whiskeys aren't so drinkable, but for something to be this high alcohol content, but still just goes down really smooth, it's delicious.
Yeah. Now I want to switch gears real quick, and then we'll come back to the whiskey. So the show, I watched it. I watched that whole goddamn show.
You really did.
I did, man. I enjoyed the show. I will say, I think I said this last time we talked, I'm not necessarily the target audience for that show. But it was really, I thought the whole cast was great. You were fantastic in it.
Thank you.
What that meant to you, because that's your proverbial big break, right?
Correct. It meant the world to me. When my agent sent me the audition and I looked at the sides, which was the lines for the character, I was like, I know how to play Trent Harrison. Like, I know how to do this. And it really was a feeling that like came over me. And I was like, this is yours for the taking. This is yours to lose. And so I went in there, prepared it a certain way, very deadpan, very too cool for school, not impressed. And I could hear the other kids going in the room, and I could hear them playing it up 10 notches above what I prepared. And I started getting in my head and thinking like, oh man, I think I prepared this wrong. And then I was like, no, you stick to your guns. You're going to go in there and do what you prepared. And I did. And immediately the casting director laughed so hard that we had to redo it the first take. And I was like, I was like, this is it. Like I got this.
I got it.
And then I got the call the next day, that it was looking like it was happening. And then 2 weeks later I found out I officially got it.
So it was like a hold on you for that, right?
Yeah. They it's called being pinned. I got pinned and I've been pinned many times. So I know that you got to take that with a grain of salt and you got to try not to think about it because it might not happen. And it did. And when I got the actual call from my manager, man, I was over the moon. I was just excited to work on something that I knew was probably going to be good because it was Mindy Kaling. And most of what she touches is gold. All of what she touches is gold. And not only that, but the character. I was like, Trent is my dude. I want to play Trent. You know, he's an idiot.
When is this? How many years ago is this? It's about 2 years ago, maybe?
That I got the audition. It was actually
when you got the part.
No, I want to say I think I found out I booked it in June of last year.
So just over a year.
Just over a year. Netflix turns their stuff around pretty quickly. I think they were done with the show earlier this year. But obviously they have their algorithms and their process in which they want to release things. And so the release date ultimately became the end of April.
How old were you when you got that part?
I was 28 when I got it. So I'm playing a lot younger than what I actually am. Most of the cast members who were in high school, who played high schoolers with me, most of them were way younger than me. There were a few people who were my age. But we all got along really, really well. I mean, everyone was so sweet and so nice. There were no egos on set. This was kind of everyone's first big thing, as far as the high school cast members went. It was the coolest experience. I've never been a part of anything like it before.
And you got another season, right?
We got another season. Really excited about that. We're still waiting to hear what's going to happen. We're still waiting to hear what's going to happen. I know that I know that Universal is gearing up to shoot certain things. I don't know what it's going to look like for Never Have I Ever, but I think every studio, every project is kind of working as its own ecosystem with its own guidelines. And I think once they have those under control, then they start doing pre-production. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I was thinking about this. How many shows do you think are going to actually address COVID? Do you think there? So in other words, I could totally see Never Have I Ever season two existing in either a COVID world or a post COVID world. And part of that, I think, could be necessity, because mm-hmm. maybe you need to shoot with masks on. Maybe you need to do all these things, and you could work that into. And I'm sure that shows are already working on doing that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be really interesting what shows do that and what shows don't. Now, with Never Have I Ever specifically, I don't know what's going to happen yet in season two. I could see it both ways. One, I know that the whole point of making this show was to properly reflect the high school experience in today's world. Originally, when Mindy Kaling was approached for the project, Netflix said, we want to do a project about your high school experience. And she was like, I don't want to do a show about a girl in the 80s. I want to do a show about a girl now. And so if they want to properly reflect that, maybe they will do it. I think on the flip side of it, maybe they won't do it yet because the season ended kind of halfway through a school year. So maybe they want to finish that school year out. I don't know. But logistically, it's going to be hard to have, we used to have 50 extras on set every day to be in the high school. And like, I don't think you could do that right now.
It's crazy what's happening. I watched something was on the TV about some of the soap operas are back and they were mm-hmm. showing what they're doing. You know, I have like CGI in there. And then Denise Richards is apparently on a soap opera. So there was a scene where she's kissing her guy on the soap opera and they CGI him in and her in. And then when they go in for the kiss, she actually kisses her real husband. So they do a close-up. The real husband grew a beard, just like the other character. And the close-up is her making out with her actual husband, supposed to be the character. So it's going to be, human beings are very ingenious. And I think they're going to find ways around this. But then there is also the flip side of it is that maybe people aren't going to want to watch entertainment that reminds them of COVID. They may want complete escapism. So maybe you don't deal with it that way.
That's a really good point. I mean, the other show that I'm involved with that I also hope will start shooting soon is the show called Superstore on NBC. And what's interesting about that show is, that takes place at like a Walmart type store. And so, if you're shooting at a Walmart.
So where's the episode where the guy comes screaming, I'm not wearing this fucking mask.
That's what my girlfriend and I keep joking about that. We're like, every episode, there has to be some idiot who won't wear a mask.
This week on Superstore, another fight, another guy screaming about fascism.
Yeah, I just don't know. I know one great thing about Superstore is that I have only been in one episode so far, but what was really cool about the experience was that every background performer on that episode, they had been working on the show for 5 years. So that was kind of when they're in season, like that's kind of their job. The series regulars, the leads, they all know the background performers. So that might work in their favor if already this is the only set that these background actors are going towards. But I think, I studied film at Temple University, not theater. And one of the coolest parts about learning how to make films to me is that, making film, making TV is problem solving. All you're doing is problem solving. And that's why it sucks what's going on right now. But if anyone's going to figure it out, it's going to be like the film and TV world, because they have to problem solve all the time. They have to make locations look different. They have to make parties look like there's more people than there actually are. I mean, this is what they specialize in. So the
fantasy
safety concern is one thing, but the aesthetic and the looks of it is
I'm surprised.
It's going to be exciting to see.
Trump is very anti-Hollywood, but I'm surprised he hasn't brought in Hollywood, because that's what he needs. Because Hollywood's specialty is making things that aren't real seem real. And that's kind of like Trump's whole policy is, yeah, like, he wants to be like, hey, this isn't really here anymore. Let me bring in Hollywood to make it seem like COVID's not around. But let's not get political. we're going to jump back into bourbon now. You know, one of the interesting things there's with these brands now, Barrel Bourbon is a relatively new brand, but then there's all the old, you know, you're familiar with like Maker's Mark and Wild Turkey and all these. And bourbon's always fascinated me because it's got such this, you know, it's America's native spirit and it's all these, but it is, I would recommend, I was reading this one. This is my friend Fred Minnick's book here, Bourbon Curious. And I would recommend that to you if you want to get into really learning it, but it's, you know, it's a very problematic history, like so much of everything in America. It's very problematic.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, whiskey was, you know, early, a lot of the early whiskey distillery owners were slave owners. Another big thing, you know, whiskey was used like kind of the first whiskey salesman, if you will. They were trading whiskey with the Indians, the Native Americans. They called them Indians then, and they were using it to exploit them. Like there would be times because fur, they would trade for fur. So they would trade whiskey and it, to the point where they would get the Native Americans drunk to take advantage of them and steal their stuff. And so, you know, there's a lot of, as much as I love it, and look, Thomas Jefferson was one of the first whiskey owners and we know Jefferson's problematic history. I only bring that up because I just think there's, it's fascinating to really, if you dive in and you find some brands that you like and you start doing some research. That said, it's also murky. To this day, I don't know that anybody can agree on where the name bourbon comes from. The Bourbons were the rulers of France were the Bourbon family. There's Bourbon County in Kentucky. So one theory is that it comes from the barrels would be stamped with Bourbon County, and that's where it came from. The other is it was New Orleans because that's where a lot of the French went, and Bourbon Street, and whiskey was very popular down there. But you can't really get any agreement on where the actual name bourbon comes from.
Now, let me ask you a question. Would you say, like, are there whiskey purists where they don't want to taste new whiskey, or is it not like that?
I mean, I'm sure there are people that have their favorites. People have their brands that they're very loyal to.
Right.
And maybe they're stubborn and they don't want to try anything else. I would say if you're asking if there's pushback when new products come out, especially maybe among the establishment, I would say there is, but there are brands that have numerous brands that have broken through. Barrel is one of them, certainly. And you've got, brands like, trying to think the very recent one, Rabbit Hole. I just did a thing with the guys from Rabbit Hole, kind of a new whiskey, and yet it's been embraced because they're doing it the right way. I mean, I think ultimately the proof is in the pudding, or in this case, in the bottle.
Right.
If the juice is good and it's really good and they're doing it the right way, that's going to shine through. So
I do really like, I like the labels, and I think today more than ever, we're a very visual society. And especially when it comes to like beer and stuff, there's a lot of these new craft breweries who are coming out with these cans that have just like really, really cool graphics on them. And I do feel like every market is saturated right now. And I feel like you really do have to have a nice, clean or cool or different label to like catch an eye these days, you know, unless it's word of mouth.
They sent us some other stuff here. I don't know if you want to try that. They got this private release series that they do.
I do want to try one of these.
It's called the Private Release Whiskey Series, and each batch features a unique blend based around their 18-year-old stocks of Kentucky whiskey that they then finish in a secondary barrel or cask. So as I said, Ben, you know, initially it's got to be new white American oak charred barrels. That's where it's got to age first to be called bourbon. But you can finish it, take it out of there, let it spend a little bit of time. So do you have the Jamaican rum one in front of you?
I do.
Yeah. That one, I haven't tried it yet, but it looks interesting to me. And I'm thinking I want to jump on this thing. So
yeah, let's do it.
This is Jamaican rum, obviously. Let's just try this and see right away if you can get that influence of the Jamaican rum, if I can get it open. Can you get yours open?
Yeah, I got mine open.
That's because you're young. And
It's just like a little taper around the top.
All right. Okay. There we go. Got it. Okay. Have you poured yourself some?
I did. I feel really exclusive with these little private releases.
You stick with me, man. We'll get you that stuff all the time. I told Joe, I said to Joe, you had written me when he got it, how excited you were about this. And he was really pleased. He said, he hopes that the whiskey lives up to the billing. And I think it does.
No, it definitely does.
All right. So we're going to try this one. So right away, the nose I get is different. You get that molasses, you're getting that sugar cane, you're getting that sweetness.
It's a much more mild smell, right?
Yeah, the alcohol level. I don't know what the proof is on this. I can tell you what it caught.
Mine says proof 116.2. Does that make sense?
Jesus, yeah. Well, then that's even higher than the batch 25. So.
Oh yeah, because the other one was 113.
By the way, just so you know how exclusive this stuff is, they're only releasing about 150 to 180 bottles total of each one of these series. So this Jamaican rum finish, less than 200 bottles of this stuff's going to be available. And it this stuff retails for $109. So
I'm in the club.
Yep. Yeah, the rum. I mean, that's it. I mean, the simplest way to describe it is the rum quality is coming through there.
Especially on the finish, like I could feel it through my, I could smell it through my nose, like the rum.
Do you like to do your whiskey and cocktails or no? You're more of a neat.
Traditionally, I'll drink my whiskey either neat or on the rocks. I don't really do many, whiskey cocktails, but I do like an old fashioned though.
That's what I got right here.
I do like an old fashioned. And I liked the Japanese highball when we had that.
Oh yeah, that's right. When we did the live stream, we had some.
I never
highballs.
Really drank those.
Are you going? Do you find yourself going crazy yet? Are you?
I think there are five months of this, right? I think there are days when I'm going crazy. I think there are moments when I go crazy for different reasons. One, I'll watch a video of some huge party somewhere, and I'll be like, "What the," or some days I'll just think like, I wish I can have that party with my friends, like sometimes I'll just be jealous of the people who
I get it
wrong, you know?
Yeah, no, I have, there's some people I know, I follow on social media that I know, and a few in particular where they are like, fuck social distancing. It's every day. They're on a boat, they're at a party, they're here, and it's a crazy sort of roller coaster of emotions I go on. There's part of me goes, it's horrible, but I'll think, I hope you get fucking COVID and then you'll, because you're fucking all of us, right?
I know.
But I don't really want that. I don't want it. And then there's a part of me.
You can't help but think for a second.
Yeah,
though.
But then there's the part of me goes, what if she doesn't get it? What if this person doesn't get it? What if she just partied her way right through this and we all had it wrong? And I, by the way, am not by any means suggesting that we should be going out and doing all that because I'm listening to the experts, but I get what you're saying about
it. Yeah. I think the way I put it to my girlfriend is for me, it's a really confusing time because I always like to see the good in people. I'm a people person. I do love people. And I just see, and I know, and I see a lot of really, really great people making bad choices. And I never want to just completely, I never want to completely like disavow or like get rid of someone because they make one bad choice. But it's so weird because this is on a global scale right now. It's like we need to be safe in order to help each other.
It's hard not to get angry. And sometimes that anger, you don't even know where to direct it. But you and I were talking right before we came on the air about this sort of Groundhog Day feel where I especially feel it at the beginning of the week because I don't know much, but I'm pretty sure that I know that at the end of this week, we're not going to be out of this.
Yeah.
Or the end of next week or the one after that or the one at, and when you're faced with that, the thought that there's this thing that is stifling life really, and that there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it other than, you know, the things you're doing to help try to squash the virus. But even that, that's where the anger comes from, is I can do everything the way I'm supposed to do it. But if 500 other people down the street aren't doing it the right way, then it doesn't matter at all whether what exactly. I'm doing, because if I walk out the door, I'm just as likely to get it.
Exactly. And then it's up to you to continue doing what you're doing and not say, well, fuck it, I'll just be the 501st person who's going to act that way. And it's hard, man. It's just really, really tough. And when it comes to being safe and being mindful, there's a spectrum, and there are some people who are like so perfectly safe, and there are some people who aren't as safe, who could add to the detriment of all of this, but at the same time they're being kind of safe. So that's why I said it's just kind of a confusing time, because it's like I think I'm being really, really safe, like really, really, really safe. But there are some people who are being
you're not leaving the house at all, is what you're saying, basically.
We'll go, my girlfriend and I will go to the park and we'll hang out in the park, you know, not away from everyone. We actually don't go grocery shopping. We use Instacart. That's not an ad. But we'll use Instacart. We don't really go to stores. We're like extremely safe. I'm still not comfortable flying. I'm not flying anywhere.
No.
You know, I had to miss my best friend, my brother's wedding that I officiated, and I got to officiate from via Zoom, which was amazing. But yeah, it was hard to not be there. And I just didn't want to get on a plane, go, and then get his 92-year-old grandmother sick. I just couldn't, I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
And I've got a lot of friends that have flown. I'm with you, man.
Me too.
Me too. I think that I worried that I'd have a panic attack when I was on the plane. Mm-hmm. I'd start thinking about the fact that these germs have to be circulating in the plane.
Right.
I'm going to be honest. This hasn't been, for me, it hasn't been as devastating, certainly, as it has been for, you know, a lot of people that I know. I've been able to manage, you know, I'm okay with being alone. I'm okay. But that said, yeah, as the fall approaches, and you and I have talked before about being big sports fans. Now, obviously, hockey's back on. We like hockey, baseball. But, you know, as the fall approaches, and I don't care what anybody says, they're not playing football this season.
They can't.
Yeah, it's not going to. I mean, they're going to try, but it's not going to happen. And that's such a big part of my life. Like, I'm a huge NFL fan. I'm a huge Eagles fan. And I'm thinking about that when the fall comes around. And again, I fully understand that me not having football, or us not having football, pales in comparison to the 100, and by that point, 180, 185,000 people that are going to be dead because of this thing.
Of course.
I understand that. But also just the rhythms of life. And for me, football has been such a big part of that rhythm of my life. And I'm looking and going, wow, like, it's really not going to happen. I don't, you know, there's not going to be, wake up Sunday morning and put on my jersey and go down to the bar where we watch the Eagles games and everybody does the chant and goes crazy. Yeah. And it's a fun day. That's not going to happen. I mean, we're not going to get to do that. And you start wondering, because this isn't crazy to think this, it might not be football next year.
Yeah, I know.
Quickly, Ben, let's settle ourselves down here. Have some whiskey. Here we go. Oh, there we go.
It's delicious.
Barrel bourbon calms you down during a pandemic.
It's wild, man. I think all of these, football season approaching, and it's probably not going to happen. And then the holiday season, it's just like, we can never fully get used to this. I think that there's just constant reminders that there's this giant thing that's so much bigger than us. And it just proves how delicate the fabric of our society is. Like, you know, it's just like we take for granted how well oiled this machine is, and all of a sudden it just takes this like invisible virus to just completely upend everything that we know and everything that everyone on this planet has known, because no one on Earth right now has ever been through anything like this.
Well, I, you know, it's, I, I don't want to say I feel bad for you and your generation. I'm older than you. I'm 20 years older than you. And when I was in my 20s, and certainly, you know, from college to around your age, things were fucked up. Of course they were. But we didn't have any internet. So first of all, we didn't know how fucked up things were. You know, you only knew your own little pot world. You know, so I probably, when you were in college is when the economy collapsed, right?
My first year.
You had that, and then you get out. You're in the entertainment business. That's a little bit of a different story, but you know, a lot of your peers got out of school, and there are no fucking jobs, and the economy's in the shitter. And now this.
Yeah.
And I gotta wonder, man. What are you now? 29.
29.
Yeah. Do you ever sit back and think to yourself, the fuck is good? What do we do here? Like most of your adult life. The world, I mean, you've had 4 years of Donald Trump. Again, not to get political, but I'm just saying.
No, it's okay.
I had nothing like that when I was young. I mean, Reagan was in, I guess, but we didn't get it. Didn't really impact me in any way.
Right.
Do you ever feel sorry for yourself? Do you ever go, shit, man?
I absolutely do, and especially because before we've had these last 4 years, we had this president who got me back into politics. I was like really into politics when I was younger because of my father. And I feel like I kind of fell out of it because I was like in later high school years and I was really only thinking about like girls and playing soccer. And then all of a sudden 2008 rolled around and I was like, I got to volunteer for this guy. I love this guy. And all of a sudden he got in office and I really felt as though things were changing. And so, yeah, not only is it just because this asshole is in, not to get political, but this asshole is in office, but it's because of where we were before that. And it's just like, I can't believe it, but then again, I can. I mean, he brings all these schmucks out from the woodwork.
Well, and by the way, you never have to apologize for calling Donald Trump an asshole on the show because he is a fucking asshole. But I would ask you this, and not that you can speak for your entire generation, but I think there's certainly a level of concern from people of my generation that your generation isn't going to get out there and do what has to happen. And I'm not saying that that's, do you feel like, you know, your people that are in their mid to late 20s, early 30s are ready to really step up and get out there and vote and do what has to be done to get Donald Trump out of office?
Yeah, I'm going to be completely honest. I'm going to say yes, when it comes to the people that are in my circle. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I am in the entertainment industry and I live in California. So I can speak for that. I don't know if I could speak for the rest of my generation, but I do know that all of my best friends out here in LA are extremely vocal, extremely active, and are constantly trying to, you know, better themselves and just kind of grow their knowledge and also like help other people understand the times that we're in right now. But I will say, even though I talk a lot of shit on the generation below me, and even though they could be.
What is that? You're a millennial?
I'm a millennial.
So what's below you? What do we call that?
I think is it Gen Z? No, Gen X.
Hey, dude, Gen Z. I'm Gen X. Come on, man.
Oh, yeah. So Gen Z is below me. I have cousins who are in Gen Z. I think sometimes they could be a bit like radical with like the PC kind of stuff.
The cancel culture stuff.
Exactly. I'm not too on board with all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I do think that they're also just young and hot-headed and they'll kind of grow out of that. And I think for the most part, I mean, look at how inclusive things seem to be a bit more inclusive now. You know, I think the younger generations, regardless of their political stance, you know, I feel like in my lifetime, like gay rights have honestly just completely flourished in my lifetime. You know, even there's a lot of the Republican side who are just like, of course, whatever, like we almost don't care about that stuff anymore, you know? And I think a lot of that has to do with the youth, kind of accepting where things have gone.
I think you're absolutely right in terms of gay acceptance. I do worry about race relations because it is the gift that keeps on giving in America. I mean, racial strife has been here. Racism has been a foundation of America from the very beginning. And man, you know, when Obama won, I thought, well, we have turned a corner, haven't we? And we did.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
We also learned that there were dark forces out there that didn't like that at all. And we got a little complacent and they took over. And so hopefully the pendulum's going to swing back. Let's have more whiskey.
Let's have more whiskey.
You're upsetting me. Why are you bringing this up? No, I'm kidding.
I'm sorry.
I think I did.
This is what I do.
Well, I think we ought to wrap this up, man. I've enjoyed this. Do you feel like your bourbon knowledge has gone up? Maybe just a tick.
Every time I talk to you, my bourbon knowledge goes up a tick.
Next time out, we're going to do something else. We've done whiskey. We did Japanese whiskey. We did bourbon. Next time out, we're going to do something completely different. We're going to do like tequila or mezcal or something.
Great. I love it. My parents are huge tequila people. So if you could tick me up on tequila, they would appreciate you.
Where do people find you on social media?
On social media, you can look me up on Instagram at Ben A. Norris. And then I have my own YouTube channel, and you can type in Benjamin Norris, and you can watch all my videos that I think are funny on there.
I'm going to cut a couple promo videos I'll send to Ben as well, and you can check my ad on at the Imbiber for some stuff from this episode of the show. I want to thank Joe Beatrice from Barrel Bourbon for coming on and giving us some knowledge and for giving us some whiskey. Thank you, Joe. Of course, Ben Norris, everybody's got to check out Never Have I Ever on Netflix. Again, I watched the whole thing. I'm excited about that show. This is the bummer. Another big bummer of COVID is knowing that you're not in production even. So I'm going to have to wait quite some time, because I'm not going to lie to you. I'm smitten by the cousin. So what's the female lead's name?
The female lead's in the show, her name is Davy.
Davy, and then her older cousin,
Kamala.
That's it.
Who might have actually been named after Kamala Harris.
See, there you go. Well, I'm smitten with her, and that's part of the reason I kept watching. No, but you do a great. You're great on that show, man. And I tell everybody to check it out. And then always looking forward to what you got coming up next. And we'll have you back anytime you want to come back on this show, do some boozing. And I want to thank you out there in the audience for tuning in. Next up, next episode, big one. We got Dan Aykroyd on the next episode. Dan Aykroyd, freaking blues brother, man. That's our next episode. I'm so excited to talk Dan Aykroyd. That's coming up. And I don't know, Ben, you got anything else?
No, I think that's it. I just to be followed by Dan Aykroyd is
you're the opening act for Dan Aykroyd right now.
It's going to be hard to follow me, but I think he could.
I think you've done a tremendous job here, man. You really have, and I really appreciate you coming on. And thank you, everybody out there. Cheers.